Beis Shvat. And I guess we'll start bringing with you a little bit about that Ebbetson. There's something very funny about bringing about that Ebbetson. Because if you would ask that Ebbetson whether she would want you to bring about her, you all know what the answer would be. She would think it was not a good idea. For more reasons than one. First of all, that Ebbetson would say, why are you wasting your time with me? Talk about somebody important. Second of all, that Ebbetson is and was a woman of phenomenal modesty, of a level of a nivus and tznius, which is nish to fashtein. It's not human. It's that Ebbetson. And that Ebbetson really would not want us to talk about her. So why do we talk about her? So first of all, we're all smart, right? We're all big chachamim. We know best what we have to do. I mean that sarcastically. But in this case, the Rebbe said this. After the Rebbetzin passed away, this is an interesting story. They printed several books on the Rebbetzin, and they published her photograph. Right? I never saw the Rebbetzin in my whole life. I never saw her. I grew up in Crown Heights. I've been around. When the Rebbetzin passed away, I was 22 years old, and I physically never saw her. That's to the extent to which she stayed out of the limelight. So when the Rebbetzin passed away, they published for the first time pictures of her. And Ayid, very good friend of Lubavitch, maybe today we'd call him Lubavitcher, who has a Hungarian background, a Satmar type background, wrote to the Rebbe that he objected to the publications of the photographs. And he very respectfully, but very directly, wrote to the Rebbe that he thinks it was a mistake and they should reprint it without the pictures. And he finishes off the letter, Ashri Hadei Shagdeilov Nishmoim Liktanim. How wonderful a generation with somebody great will take heed to somebody less than themselves because they're saying the truth. So the Rebbe answers him. And the Rebbe clearly did not object to the publishing of the photographs. To the contrary, the Rebbe was in favor of it. And the Rebbe writes that the pictures are important because they add to the Vahacha Yitein Alibe. They add to the Vahacha Yitein Alibe. You guys are too young to remember this, so I'll tell you b'kitzit, that when the Rebbetzin passed away, the expression that the Rebbe used for that year, over and over and over again, was Vahacha Yitein Alibe. In other words, we're all used to the Rebbe saying, Deirah, the lesson, Deirah, Deirah. In Tavshin Mem Ches, instead of the Rebbe using the word Deirah, he used the expression Vahacha Yitein Alibe. Vahacha Yitein Alibe is a pasuk. And it means literally, the living will take to heart. When somebody passes away, people need to learn a lesson from the fact that somebody died and from the specific person who died and what you can learn from their lives. So the Rebbe said, by publishing her photograph, we add to the Vacha Yitin Alib. In other words, by seeing pictures of the Rebbetzin, it enhances the inspiration we could possibly get from her life. So we talk about the Rebbetzin. We talk about the Rebbetzin, even though in all likelihood the Rebbetzin would not approve of it, but this is, it's her schus. I'll give you a bunch of stories and hopefully learn a lesson from this. It's very difficult to tell stories about the Rebbetzin because there are so few. Everybody knows all the stories. But I prepared stories that I put under three categories. First, I want to tell you some stories about her humility. Then I want to tell some stories about her pshitus, her plainness, and her respect, her bittul to the Rebbe. And then I want to tell some stories about her kindness. These are the three points that I prepared to discuss with you. And then afterwards, like I said, I'll try and extract a real lesson for us from her life, especially for girls and for women. An interesting story. There are two versions to the story. I'm going to tell you both versions, even though one version is not true. But I'm not sure which one it is, so I'll tell you both versions. The Rebbetzin grew up in Lubavitch. Lubavitch was not a fun place to grow up. I mean, in the summertime it was wonderful. But in the wintertime you were in perpetual mud. One of the Rebbetzin, the people who were close to the Rebbetzin, told me that the Rebbetzin said to her, Rebbetzin told her that in the wintertime you couldn't walk the streets. There was literally 6 inches of mud. So they used to put out boards, planks of wood, and you walked on the boards. There were de facto sidewalks. The road was mud, and the sidewalk was a plank of wood.
It was cold when that mud freezes.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't cold enough, Nebuch. Maybe it wasn't the whole, maybe in the heart of winter, but mud doesn't freeze as easy as water does. Anyway, her parents, the Rebbetzin, the Friedrich Rebbe, the Rebbetzin did not want them to go outside. It was a city full of Bachrim, and Bachlal, they wanted them in the house. So they never went outside. Once their parents left, so they decided to take a walk. So the Rebbetzin and her older sister got dressed, so they shamed, wanted to walk around the streets of Lubavitch. They walked out the front door, and there are these places so muddy. They're walking on these planks, and they walked. As soon as they walked out the door, a goat. Now, Lubavitch is a shtetl. Goats walked around freely, understand? There was a shtetl life. It's following them. And for whatever reason, they were not comfortable with this goat following them. So they started to run, and they fell, and they came back in that house, they were in a big mess. And they joked for years after, that our father sent a goat to watch us. So the Rebbetzin grew up in Lubavitch. She didn't have a lot of friends. Amongst the few friends that she had were the Marozov girls. The Rebbe Rashab had a gabbai whose name was Abchonia Marozov, and he had two daughters, one of whom is still alive. I think she's over 100. Another one passed away recently. Someone here is related. Another one passed away recently. She was 90 or 99 years old. Tila and Lachaleh, I think.
Still alive now?
One of them is still alive, yeah. She's over 100. They lived in Lubavitch. And they were their only girlfriends, the only friends that they had, maybe one or two others. There was nothing happening in Lubavitch. So, there are two versions to the story. She came to visit the Rebbetzin. They found her someplace in Israel. They brought her to the Rebbetzin to visit the Rebbetzin. And for the Rebbetzin, it was a great simcha to meet a girlhood friend from the old days, from the beautiful... The truth of the matter is, the shtetl life was really very serene and beautiful in many real ways that we can't imagine. Us who live in such noisy cities, we don't know what quiet is, we don't know what darkness is, we don't know what thinking is. Our world is so inundated with details, like I explained to you before. When you get old, you can't deal with it. But when you're young, you can enjoy it. The Rebbetzin didn't... appreciated this visit. And they had a conversation with Tabracht. Before this woman left, the Rebbetzin says to her, "Do you remember what I told you many years ago as a child? Remember what I told you as a child?" So she said, "No, I don't remember. It's so many years." Anyway, they say goodbye and she leaves. As soon as the door closes, this woman, who was probably then in her 80s, says to her friends, "Of course I remember what you told me as a girl." And I heard two versions. One version was that the Rebbetzin said to her, "I don't want my husband to be a Rebbe. I don't want my husband to be a Rebbe." A second version, which I heard from a more reliable source, was that the Rebbetzin told her when her father became Rebbe, that after my father there's not going to be a continuation. There won't be a second. In other words, after the Friedrich Rebbe, but Zankin Hemshach. And of course, there was a Hemshach, the Rebbetzin. So the Rebbetzin asked her if she remembered this exchange, and she made believe that she didn't remember. I guess she felt it was better for her to act like she doesn't remember. But she remembered very well these conversations. The total of both of these versions of the story is that the Rebbetzin, in her mind, as a person, as a young person, didn't see herself as a leader, as a Rebbetzin, as the wife of a leader, the Rebbetzin. She saw herself as just a regular person. And that's really how she lived her whole life. The Rebbetzin had Leichter that she got from her namesake. The Rebbetzin's name was Chaya Mushka, and she was named after the Rebbetzin's name was Chaya Mushka. And she got from her family, from her mother, she got the same Leichter that her great grandmother, the Rebbetzin Chaya Mushka, used to use for Shabbos candles. And the Rebbetzin never used them. Every Friday she would put them on the table, and she would use her own Leichter. One of the interesting things about the Rebbetzin was that the Rebbetzin was a very, very, very refined woman. She was very careful not to hurt people's feelings. And she really didn't like telling people what to do. But she always navigated in a very subtle way that when she benchlicht, nobody was in the room. There were always people in the house, especially in the later years when she was not so well. But she always worked it out that people should leave the room when she benchlicht. She always found a very diplomatic way of nobody should be with her when she benchlicht. This is a fact. And that Rebbetzin once said about the Leichter, that she said, "How can I, a simple woman, bench at the candles of a great Rebbetzin?" He says, "Well, ich leg der Reck auf den Tisch, und ich gucke sie, feel ich zugebunden zu dem Mischbach." The Rebbetzin said, "I put them down on the table, and I look at them, and I feel connected to my family." This is how the Rebbetzin felt about herself. She wouldn't use them. She would put them on the table and just look at them. This was to her as close as she was going to get to the pamutas, to the candlesticks of the Rebbetzin. A friend of mine told me an interesting story. He's a Lu. The Lu family's Zalman Jaffe's grandchildren were close to the Rebbetzin. Whenever they came to America, they would visit her. So he told me that the last time they visited the Rebbetzin, so they would come into the house and they were warned. They were given a 40-minute lecture about how to behave. So when you come into the house, you sit still, you don't ask for anything. Whatever the Rebbetzin puts on the table is good. You don't ask for a different type of cake. And they would also, they would ask Taka, and they would get, if they, whatever they asked for, they would get. And then when they would leave, Zalman Jaffe would scream at them. But before they left, Zalman Jaffe says to the grandchildren, who maybe sing a song. So this friend of mine told me that he started to sing the Beinoni. The Beinoni is the niggun that the Friedrich Rebbe favored. And the Rebbetzin listened, and he says he saw tears in her eyes. And when he finished singing, he said to her, this is the niggun of the Friedrich Rebbe. So the Rebbetzin said, I know, he was my father. And she said it on the one hand with a pride, and on the other hand with a pshitas, with a simplicity. This was the Rebbetzin. Another interesting story is the story about the soup. Again, some of these stories are very well known, but I can't make them up, you know what I'm saying? Some people know how to do that. I haven't figured that trick out yet. I'm not that old. The Rebbetzin worked for many, many years in the Manhattan Library, in the library of Manhattan, the city. And she was Musia. That's what she was. Nobody knew who she was. She never referred to herself by her last name. She wouldn't allow anybody to address her by her last name. She was Musia. And she had a woman whom she worked with in the library. And the woman was not well, and she was in the hospital. So that Rebbetzin used to bring her every day a thermos of tea, soup. She would cook for her soup and bring it to her, which is part of the Rebbetzin's kindness, Pashut. The Rebbetzin was Pashut a very nice person, and I'm going to get to that later, Mitzvah. Came Shabbos, there was a problem. So she bought a second thermos, so she had two thermoses, one for Friday, one for Shabbos. And then there was another problem, so she ended up having three thermoses. Sometimes she would bring this woman soup for 3 days, so she brought in three thermoses of soup, which would be hot on each day. It happened once that she couldn't bring it herself, so she sent it with Chesed Halberstam, with her shamish. So he comes to the hospital, and he goes into this woman and says, here's the soup from the Rebbetzin. And the woman says, from whom? From the Rebbetzin? You don't know the Lubavitch Rebbetzin? The Rebbetzin? What do you mean, Musia? Yeah, she had no idea. She worked with the Rebbetzin for a very, very long time, and she was Musia. The interesting part of the story was that Rebbetzin stopped bringing her coffee, tea, soup after that. Once it was disclosed that she was a Rebbetzin, she disappeared. You treated her like anybody else. She was your best friend. The moment you started to notice her, she disappeared. She would just disappear from your life. One of the famous stories that's told is that Rebbetzin and her sister used to go to the Lowen's Bakery. You know where Lowen's Bakery was?
No.
On Nostrand Avenue. Only if you know where Nostrand Avenue is. But there's a street that's called Nostrand, and people used to not be afraid to walk there. It was a Jewish street. Nostrand was like Utica. I mean, even I remember as a kid, Utica with a bookstore and a kosher restaurant. It's hard to imagine, but not that many years ago, all these streets were full of Jews. And Lowen's Bakery was on Nostrand Avenue, and she would go and buy challah. So she stood in line, and somebody noticed that she was there, so they whispered to the people around them that this is the Lubavitch Rebbetzin. So slowly but surely the line disappeared. Everyone just sort of disappeared from the line. The Rebbetzin found herself at the front of the line. She went, she bought challah, she went home. She never went to the bakery again. She never went to the bakery again. This was the kind of a person that Rebbetzin was. And it wasn't only tzniyus. It was, please don't notice me. I don't want to be special. I don't want to be treated special. Leave me alone. And it wasn't insensitive. It was sincere. She literally felt that she wants to be like everybody else, and she didn't want that people should make something special out of her, and it hurt her deeply. It bothered her when people treated her in an extraordinary way. So these are some stories about her and her modesty. Now some stories about her relationship with the Rebbe. And again, I don't know, sorry?
Is there something wrong with other Rebbetzins because they weren't like that? Or
how are we supposed to answer these kind of questions? The other Rebbetzins were also extremely tzniyistic of women.
I don't remember which one, but like one of them wasn't.
Wasn't what?
Like she was more like out there in the public and like...
Out they were in the public amongst the Rebbe's in Rivka.
Yeah.
But then she didn't go out there.
But people used to come and ask
to her house, to her home. She was a real Rebbetzin, and she played the role of queen. A Rebbetzin is a Malka, and it was done with the greatest of tznius, with the greatest of edelkeit. But listen, Tveira was the Nasi of Yisrael. She was a Rebbetzin, Gefirt Kal Yisrael. Yeah, Chulda Hanaviya was the Navi in her generation. She happened to be a woman. Tveira dealt. How did Tveira deal with tznius? You know, she wouldn't meet people in a home. The Rebbe Tznivka had her way of doing tznius. It doesn't, chas v'shalom, reflect negatively on other Rebbetzins. See, one of the things we need to learn, that Teira is actually dynamic. In other words, there's a secular expression, and we don't agree with the secular expression, but there's credibility to it within a certain framework, and that is, there are a lot of pathways to the truth. Secular people mean a lot of pathways to the truth. They mean different religions, Achman Ratzlan. But Yiddishkeit has many pathways. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu only said the truth. Aaron HaKohen made peace between husband and wife. Is that a fault in Moshe Rabbeinu? It's a different pathway to the truth. The Rebbe, this was her thing. I don't know why. I never discussed it with her. This was her mahus. This was her essence. So it doesn't reflect negatively on anybody else. Again, as I said to you, I want to share with you some stories, thank you very, very much, about the Rebbe's relationship with the Rebbe. And some of these stories are absolutely amazing. But I want you people to remember, now, you're not married. None of you are married, right? But I'm interested, you will be married. And I imagine you see marriages, right? Your parents are married to each other, I hope. So you know how a couple is with one another. The Rebbe and the Rebbetzin were a husband and a wife. Now, I want you to try these stories on for size, okay? There was a person in the Rebbe's house whose name happened to be Menachem Mendel. That's his name. And he was in the house. Whatever he did in the house, he was one of those people who was close to the Rebbetzin. And he had access, as they say. And another fellow was there, referred to him as Menachem. Said, Menachem, whatever, pick up the napkin, I don't care what. And the Rebbetzin said to him, in der Stub zogt man ish dem nomen. In this house, we don't say that word. The Rebbetzin said to him, in this house, we don't say the word Menachem. Think about it.
What?
The Rebbe's name. Think about it. It's awesome. Yeah, your question is valid. Why? It's a great question. I know a person whose family is very close to the Rebbetzin, and they have a Nechamadina, and they have a Yosef Yitzchak. And all of their children, they call by their names. Nechamadina, they called Lacherke, and Yosef Yitzchak, they called Zisinke, Kukinke. They wouldn't use the names of the children who had the Rebbetzin's parents' names. You understand? They gave nicknames. The point is, there was an edelkeit that the Rebbetzin should be sensitive to somebody calling somebody else by her husband's name is a remarkable thing.
But the name.
Because the Rebbe wants us to. The Rebbe wants us to. And we're not the Rebbetzin and the Rebbe, but we should know the stories anyway. I mean, the Rebbe said 50 years ago you should name your children Menachem Mendel after the Tzemach Tzedek. And everybody understood that he didn't mean the Tzemach Tzedek. 50 years ago the Rebbe said that if you have a Yosef Yitzchak, you should give a name after the Tzemach Tzedek. The Rebbetzin was frequently called to give messages to the Rebbe. The Rebbetzin, people used to call out the Rebbetzin to ask the Rebbe for brachas and things. And the Rebbetzin always used to say, I'm very afraid to give over things to my husband. To my husband, you have to give things over exactly, precisely. And she would make people repeat the same thing two or three times so she had the exact words how to speak to the Rebbe. Now, the Rebbetzin was a very smart lady. And she didn't have psychological problems. She heard you the first time. But when she would give over a message for somebody to the Rebbe, she would make every effort to repeat their words verbatim. She's talking to the Rebbe. Then when she would give back messages, she would call up and say, "Der Mann hat gesagt genau azoi." My husband said exactly this, and she was careful to repeat the Rebbe's words word for word. Think about it. When she gave a message to the Rebbe, she was careful to not embellish it, and when she repeated the Rebbe's words, she was careful not to add any nuance to the words of the Rebbe. I would like us all to think about it, and think about it some more. When the Rebbe and the Rebbe lived in France, I mean, this is, again, a piece of history which people don't, are not sensitive to. Yeah, the Rebbe grew up in royalty. In Lubavitch, she was a princess. In Rostov, she was a princess. Right? In Leningrad, she was a princess. She married the Rebbe, and they moved to Berlin. What do you think they lived in Berlin? What kind of life do you think they had in Berlin? They had a four-bedroom apartment. They had a studio apartment. Don't we have a studio apartment? Mm-hmm. They didn't even have a bedroom. The whole apartment was one room. When the Rebbe and the Rebbe moved to Paris, they had a studio apartment, one room, the cheapest rent they could get. That's how they lived. And there was a man who was very close to them, who visited them in their apartment and couldn't believe how they lived. The Rebbe and the Rebbe, the daughter and son of the Friedrich and Rebbe, were living in such simple conditions. I don't want to call it meager conditions, because there was a lot of dignity and honor, but simple. And he said to the Rebbe, you shouldn't live like this. You need several rooms. You need at least a bedroom, for heaven's sakes. The Rebbe sit and learn. I mean, some of the Rebbe slept. I don't know. Maybe the Rebbe stood in the hall. But they had no place to move. So he says to the Rebbe, maybe I can get you a bigger apartment. And the Rebbe says, I don't know, my husband doesn't seem interested. So this guy didn't think too much. He went and he rented an apartment. He found an apartment and he rented it. And he comes to the Rebbe and says, the Rebbe, I want you to know the apartment is waiting for you to take it. I rented it. So the Rebbe says, ich will sich durchreden mit mein Mann. I'll talk to my husband, to the Rebbe, about it. And she never gets back to him. The next day she sees him and she ignores, she doesn't mention it. Day after, a week passes, he sees her every day and she doesn't mention the apartment. So after a while, he finally says to her, what about the deed? What about the apartment? So the Rebbe shrugs her shoulders and says, der Mann ist in ganzen nicht interessiert. My husband has no interest. He's perfectly comfortable in the huge apartment that they have. Now, the Rebbe is the Rebbe, but the Rebbetzin was not accustomed to living so simple. She wasn't. And it was a tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. And she did it with joy. We know stories from the Rebbe's time that they were in France, how when they came to France, the Rebbe used to walk several miles. The Rebbe should have Cholav Yisrael, kosher milk. And she would go herself and milk the cow and bring it home, and she pasteurized it also. How the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin went to different butchers. And the Rebbe went into the butcher, and he started to speak to the butcher to see what he knows. And after he spoke to the butcher for a while, he says to the butcher, "Du wirst ihr zufriedenstellen, weil ich esse von der Fleisch. If you'll make her happy, I'll eat the meat." In other words, the Rebbe first, he had to pass the Rebbe's test, whatever that was, and then he had to pass her test about kashering meat. Girls today don't understand this, but 75 years ago, every girl, when she was 14, 15, 16 years old, was taught how to kasher flesh and how to check a chicken for problems and which shots to go to the Rebbe with. Because in those days, you bought a chicken live, you went to the sheikhet and he shechted it, you took it home, you took the feathers off, you're looking at your fingers, what would happen to your fingers, Nishgefella. But the Rebbe was raised kashering flesh. So the Rebbe spoke to the butcher and the Rebbe gave him his approval and said to the butcher, if my wife is happy with how you kasher, I'll eat. There were several bakeries in Paris, and there was one bakery that the Rebbe chose to eat out of, he trusted. And somebody was walking out of the bakery and sees the Rebbe walking in, or whatever the case was, and he said, as a joke, it was a total joke, "You eat from this bakery?" So the Rebbe didn't eat bread anymore. That's it. The Rebbe told the story over, and then she said, "Had the Rebbe to go home, Asma came bread tegen de gat. The Rebbe to help, we didn't even have bread." That's the kind of standard the Rebbe had. And all the Rebbe concerned herself with was making the Rebbe comfortable, giving the Rebbe, helping the Rebbe out, and so on and so forth. The Rebbetzin visited France in 1952-53, after the Rebbe was already Rebbe, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit more later. But when she was gone, she asked Mrs. Dubinsky to cook for the Rebbe. The Rebbe had yechidus 3 nights a week. When the Rebbe had yechidus, the Rebbetzin waited for him. The Rebbetzin would not go to sleep till the Rebbe came home. If coming home was 7 o'clock in the morning, the Rebbetzin was sitting and waiting for the Rebbe to come home. And when the Rebbe came home, he had a hot meal that was fresh. Now, how do you keep food hot and fresh for 10 hours? Huh? It's impossible, right? So the Rebbe had a whole complicated system of pots, which he had these enamel pots, a pot inside a pot, which would put hot water in the lower pot, so the food in the upper pot would stay warm, and it wouldn't get crisp, you understand? And Mrs. Dubinsky, when the Rebbe went to France, so the Rebbe brought her pots and showed her how she should cook for the Rebbe, that whenever the Rebbe is ready to eat, the food should be edible and warm and fresh. This is the kind of things that Rebbetzin was concerned with.
The Rebbe tired of Dubinsky?
Sorry?
The Rebbe tired of Dubinsky?
She didn't tell me that. I would imagine that he did, but the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin had a very interesting relationship, and it was a relationship based on a lot of respect. Respect means a lot of things that they wouldn't say to each other. The Rebbetzin used to say things to the Rebbe also, but she measured 15 times before she would make a request to the Rebbe about his health. And the Rebbe Mesama had the same kind of relationship with the Rebbetzin. A story which is not so widely known. I don't know where I heard this story or read this story, but it's an interesting story. That there's a picture that the Rebbetzin once showed somebody. In the crazy world in which we live, I'm a little bit surprised. The picture's not public. Of the Rebbe, the Rebbe's on top of a mountain in the Alps, the French Alps. Now, the Rebbe's wearing a beret. And on the back of the picture, there's a date. The Rebbe's wearing a date. And she showed this picture to this person. She said to the Rebbe, to this person, the Rebbe went with her up on the top of the mountains. And how the Rebbe had a whole discussion with her about how you could see the Eivishter's, the greatness of the Eivishter and the beauty of nature. Sumara menecha merumi bareila. These are some more stories about the Rebbetzin. These stories, more than anything else, tell you about her respect and her love and her admiration for the Rebbe. And finally, I would like to tell you a third category of stories. I don't have that many stories to tell, but nevertheless, I want to share them with you. But I want to preface. I want to make a hakdama. And that is that we all call ourselves chassidim, right? The euphemism is chassidish. The opposite of chassidish is not chassidish. And chassidish has to do with such exalted things as saying chitas, as learning sefer hamitzvahs, and going on miftzayim, and all kinds of wonderful things. What frequently gets lost on us, and it's unfortunate and not true, is that part of Chassidish, a critical, a central part of Chassidish, is Midas Tevis. It's Pashut being nice to people. And some of us are so obsessed with our Chassidishkeit that it's conceivable that in our Bein Adam L'Chaveri we're Pashut not pretty, we're ugly. We're Pashut mid shame. Disgusting even. If there's one thing that above all else characterized the Rebbetzin, in other words, if you would meet the Rebbetzin, which I never did, the thing that would strike you most about her was not how holy she was. The Rebbetzin kept that a secret. Not that she had connection to the Eibishter, that the Rebbetzin kept a secret. But that she was poshut, a nice person. The Rebbetzin did not have the capacity to insult somebody. She couldn't hurt anybody's feelings. It was not in her nature. She was poshut, a nice person. And not only was she nice, she was genuinely interested in people. She wanted to know you. She wanted to know everything about you. People would call the Rebbetzin, the Rebbe would ask them how they're doing, how's their family. And the Rebbetzin wanted to know every detail about everybody's lives. She really cared about you. And if you had a problem, she wanted to know about it. And she wanted to know every detail. And if she felt... She had opinions. Not necessarily that she asked the Rebbe. She had her own opinions. The Rebbetzin was an extremely nice person. And if I may say so, if there's a lesson, a very blatant lesson that we could learn from the Rebbetzin's life, is this idea that an important part of Chassidus is Midas Tevis. Unfortunately, in our times, many have failed to appreciate that being nice to people is a part of Chassidus. The Friedrich Rebbe Nesichus writes how today you can have Chassidim who know a lot of Chassidus, they daven all day long, and they're in Adla Chavere, they're so unpleasant, they're so disgusting. The Rebbe's Friedrich Rebbe uses the expression, you can't stand next to them. The Rebbetzin, above all else, was poshut, a nice lady. She was nice to people. Any person that she met felt that she embraced them, she included them in her life, and she genuinely cared about them. This is Chassidus. Chassidus is Midas Tevis. Chassidus is being nice to people. So a couple of little stories. And again, I don't know if I have any stories to tell you that you don't know, but I'll tell them to you anyway. The first is I started to tell you that Rebbetzin visited France. In 1952 or 53, I don't know what year, the Rebbe sent the Rebbetzin to France. The Rebbe had just become a Rebbe. most of Anash, most of Hasidim, most of Lubavitch, in other words, were nomads. They had no home, no country. They had survived Hitler and Stalin. They ended up in the DP camps, displaced persons camps. In other words, they had no country. And over the course of the next decade, or whatever, half a decade, that means about 5, 6, 7 years, they would have to find places to live. A good block of them, probably the majority, went to Eretz Yisrael. A considerable number moved to New York. And a handful were scattered. Some went to Australia, some went to South America. And the Rebbe wanted to know how they were doing. They moved out of Germany. They were living in the DP camps, displaced persons camps in Germany. What had been concentration camps was transformed into these living quarters for thousands of people. And then most of them moved to France. The Rebbe wanted to know what's going on with Hasidim. He wanted to know what's going on. If you don't mind, I'd appreciate it. He wanted to know what was going on with Hasidim. But he wanted to know firsthand. So he sent the Rebbe. And the Rebbe went to Paris, and she spent some time, a few days or a few weeks, I don't know how long, and she visited Chassidim. But nobody knew she was there. People simply did not know how she looked. There were two or three people, Rebbe Nyaman Gardetsky, the Lanagashet of Fola Volshansky, who knew she was there. They were given the mandate of leading her around. And it was essentially an undercover mission. The Rebbe wanted to see up close how Chassidim are doing, how their families are doing, how their children were doing. And Rabbi Volshansky, who essentially led her around from place to place, repeats that she spoke about Chassidim like a mother speaks about children. Her sentiment, her feelings, her concern for Anash was like a mother worries about her own children. That's how he felt, she feels about Chassidim.
She flew from the United.
Yeah, she took a ship, but she was gone for a while, and she spent time in Paris, and she looked up close at Chassidim. It was, in effect, a one-way mirror. She saw them, but they didn't know that she was...
She hid her.
Sorry?
She hid, or just they didn't know that she was there?
I'm assuming that they didn't know the Ebbetson. I can't imagine her hiding. Another story, very interesting. So again, this is a famous story, but Chassid Halberstam tells a story that he drives the Ebbetson around, and she saw furniture, belongings on a sidewalk. They were driving by in a certain street, and they saw furniture on the sidewalk, so she told Chassid to stop the car and to back up, and he should ask what's going on. And they told her that it was a family who hadn't paid rent. I don't even know if they were Jewish. They may have been Goyim. They were being evicted. They were being kicked out. The marshal had come and thrown them out of the apartment. So the Rebbe asked Chassid Halberstam how much money they owe, and how much is the rent for the next month. So he got the number, and the Rebbe wrote a check for the full amount. They shouldn't be evicted from the apartment. It's a simple story when you have to have money to be able to do that, right? I don't know if the Rebbe had money, but for her, this was a priority. And finally, one little detail. I heard this from Dr. Feldman. You know Dr. Feldman, right? Dr. Feldman on President Street? He was, in effect, the Rebbe's doctor. He was very close to them. And like he told us that part of the reason he was hired to be the Rebbe's doctor is because it was an understanding that what he sees and hears, he does not repeat. So he came to Rabbi Yossi Yeshiva and spoke for an hour and said nothing. He didn't say very much at all. Because he said, I'm not allowed to tell you private stuff. Well, that's exactly why we called him. But in any event, but he did tell us one interesting thing. He said, I can tell you as a matter of fact that the Rebbe had Ruach HaKodesh. Those were his words. He says one day, he called it, only Dr. Feldman, but he walks around in the winter without a coat. So he was outside without a coat. He walks into his house, the phone rings, and the Rebbe asks him why he's outside without a coat. It's cold, he can get sick. He says, how did the Rebbe know that he was outside without a coat? Moreover, an interesting thing he said. When the Rebbe was younger, she traveled. She walked the streets. People who didn't know who she was, but she knew Chassidim. When Dr. Feldman knew that Ebbetson was the 1980s, that Ebbetson was basically stuck in her house, or living in her house, didn't walk the streets, Lubavitch had grown exponentially. There were so many more Chassidim, so many people who joined Lubavitch, who had not been in Lubavitch 10 years before, 20 years before, 30 years before, and that Ebbetson knew everybody's name. Not only she knew everybody's name, she knew the name of everybody's children. And when he would come to the house, the Rebbe would ask her questions about patients that he had. How this one doing, how's this one doing? And he always wondered, how does she know these people? She never met them. She never saw them. How does she know how many children they have and which child it was and that this child had visited him? He never understood how the Rebbetzin has all this information. He was convinced without a shadow of a doubt that the Rebbetzin knew things in ways that most people are not capable of knowing things. In any event, I just spent 40 minutes telling you stories. That's what I just did. And the stories are their own lesson. The stories don't need to be explained. The stories don't need to be qualified. The stories speak for themselves. V'achayit in Alibe means, if we are chassidim of the Rebbe, if we are chassidim of the Rebbetzin, they are our models. More than anything else, their lives are a model of how our lives are supposed to be. In other words, a chassid is not somebody who talks about his Rebbe. A chassid is not somebody who appreciates his Rebbe. A chassid is somebody who learns from his Rebbe. And his Rebbe is his model of how he should live his life. None of us are going to be a Rebbe. None of us are going to be a Rebbetzin. But if we are chassidim, a chassid means somebody who takes from the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin examples of how we need to live our lives. So I told you many stories with many aspects, and I want to share with you some lessons, some very, very important lessons that we could learn from all the stories that I just shared. These stories are relevant to all Hasidim, but they're especially relevant to girls. And of course, the Rebbetzin is your model. And these are very important lessons to learn. They're very obvious lessons, but they're real lessons. And in our fake and phony world, they're lessons that require an element of Mesiras Nefesh. If you want to live like the Rebbetzin, I don't think you have to lock yourself in your house. I don't think the Rebbe would approve of it, because the Rebbe wants us to conquer the world. And conquering the world is as much the responsibility of Neshei Chabad as it is of Chassidei Chabad. Nevertheless, even when we go out into the world, there's a way to go out into the world and be different, right? You say the Haggadah every Pesach, right? I would imagine you say the Haggadah. So it says in the Haggadah, Melameh Shehoyu Yisrael Mitzuyanim Sham. Remember those words? Shehi Sham Lagoi. So it says in the Haggadah, Melameh Shehoyu Yisrael Mitzuyanim Sham. What is the translation of the word Mitzuyanim? And I'm going to give you a hint. It doesn't mean excellent. Mitzuyan doesn't mean excellent. No. That would be with an ayin. There's no ayin in Mitzuyanim. What does Mitzuyan mean besides for excellent, huh? Mitzuyim. Mitzuyan means distinct, different. You could be in Elam Hazeh, you could conquer this world and be Mitzuyan, distinct, different. People look at you and they see that this is taka, part of this world, going to conquer this world, but Mitzuyan, different. And there are a few very clear lessons we can learn from the Rebbe's life. The first lesson is nicht zu blotzen von sich, not to carry around bellows that advertise, here I come. You know, we live in a fake world. And in the fake world in which we live, there is an attitude that has to do with marketing yourself. You want to get ahead? You want people to know who you are? You have to show yourself off. That is vulgar. It's the opposite of tznius, not just for a woman. It's the opposite of tznius for a man. The Rebbetzin was a person who had no airs about herself. She did not advertise herself. Her presence was not in a way that when she came into a room, she took up a lot of space. Now I want to explain what that means. The Rebbetzin took up an enormous amount of space. The Rebbetzin was a giantess. She was a very, very big woman. She was big enough to encompass in herself everybody. But she took up space in such a way that she left room for everybody else. Lesson. For some of us it's easy, for some of us it's very, very difficult. Some people, wherever they are, they make a lot of noise. Now making noise by itself could be a good thing. The question is, the kind of noise that I make, does it take up space in a way that takes away the space from other people? That Rebbetzin did not take up anybody's space. In fact, her very existence left space for everybody else. It's a very important lesson. It's not in the spirit of the Rebbetzin to advertise ourselves, to advertise our purpose, yes, to advertise our mission, to advertise what we're supposed to teach the world, yes, but not ourselves. The Rebbetzin was very proud, and the Rebbetzin was a Schneerson. I didn't think about this, but there are people who thought that they could get a little too friendly with the Rebbetzin, and they saw strength, they saw akshonis, they saw a do not trespass. The Rebbetzin was a very strong woman, but it was veiled with a softness, it was veiled with a subtlety that only rarely did you see the Rebbetzin tell people, you just crossed the line, now get back across. The people who were close to the Rebbetzin knew this, and some of them were foolish enough to test it and to see that there was a lion underneath the Rebbetzin. She wasn't a soft woman, she was a very strong personality, but her existence was very inviting. She didn't advertise herself in a way that her presence took up a lot of space, didn't take up any space at all. That's a very a powerful lesson you could learn from the Rebbe. A second similar lesson, but a little bit different, and I want to speak about it separately, is that Rebbetzin was a woman who everything that she was on the inside. Everything that she was underneath, was inside. I'm sure you are old enough to know this rule already. You meet people, they make a certain impression. You meet people, make a certain impression. The longer you get to know them, what happens? The impression changes, and usually it's not favorable. The better you know a person, the more you see that they're less than you initially thought. It's very tragic, but it's true. People, the more we know them, the more we see their foibles, their weaknesses. And of course, when we want to judge other people, we just take out a mirror, take a look at ourselves and say, okay, it's okay that they're not perfect. I'm not perfect either. But Rebbetzin was the kind of a person, the better you knew her, the more she became. Because there was literally more on the inside than on the outside. There's a woman who told me, a woman that I know well, I know her. She said, I had a relationship with the Rebbetzin, and she would only talk fashion to me, only talk fashion. And I wanted to talk deeper things, I wanted to talk about the Rebbe and Hasidus. She wouldn't let me. She never said, I don't want to talk about it. But she always navigated the discussion where she wanted it to go. And it bothered her. She felt that this was a chassadin in the Rebbetzin. And we talked about it. I said to the Rebbetzin, wanted you to see this, and not to see something different. So she didn't let you. The Rebbetzin was a person with many layers. And there was much, much more on the inside than is on the outside. In the old tradition of Chabad Hasidus, what is this called? What's the Hebrew word for this? Pnimius, exactly, a pnimi. But Rebbetzin was a woman whose integrity, whose emes, was not what you saw, but who she was and what was on the inside. And there were very few people, from what I understand, whom the Rebbetzin allowed to see that dimension of herself. Let me tell you a story, girl. Listen to this word. I was going to say it to you before, I forgot to tell it to you now. I don't want to say names because I don't know how much permission I have to tell these stories. There's a man who was very close to the Rebbetzin who told me a lot about her, relatively speaking. And I said to him, whatever you tell me, I'm going to repeat. He said, okay, so I'm repeating it. But there was a young man who sat by the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin at a table, Shabbos and Yom Tov. He ate with them, Pashut. Pesach, he would say the Manishtana. One of those stories which makes your hair stand on your head was, there was once a misunderstanding where he thought he told the Rebbetzin that he was invited to the Pesach Seder. He was very uncomfortable. You think it's comfortable, the Rebbe, the Rebbetzin, by Pesach Seder? Alone? The Rebbe, the Rebbetzin, and you? It's not so comfortable. So he made arrangements to be invited someplace to the Seder, and somehow the message was not communicated. He came into the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin's house at 1 o'clock in the morning, not at the Pesach Seder, and the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin were waiting for him. They were before Kiddush. Isn't that amazing? Can you imagine? He'd been mevatel for this. Somehow, he thought he told them, and he didn't. They waited till 1 o'clock in the morning for him to come home to the Manishtana. Propeller. And this happened in the later years. And so this guy told somebody, that told me, that he would sit by the table, the Rebbe sitting wherever the Rebbe sat, the Rebbe sitting wherever the Rebbe sitting sat, and they waited for him to sit down. Until he sat down, he wouldn't eat. And the Rebbe would look at the Rebbe, and the Rebbe would look at the Rebbetzin, wouldn't say anything, and the Rebbetzin would say, Was macht? Plenty been plenty. How is so-and-so doing? I think he's okay, what I hear. The Rebbe would look at the Rebbetzin, wouldn't say a word, and the Rebbetzin would say, when did you ask last? And he would say, well, yesterday. So the Rebbe would look at the Rebbetzin, and the Rebbetzin would say, why don't you ask today? So He would say, okay, we finished eating. And the Rebbe would look at the Rebbe, and the Rebbe would say, no, go make the phone call now. This was a regular scenario. The Rebbe would look at the Rebbe, and the Rebbe always knew what the next question was. Now, you understand? This is an understood, this is a different kind of, the Rebbe would look at the Rebbe, and the Rebbe, they didn't have to speak to each other. They operated on different planes than most people. But in any event, when the Rebbetzin passed away, some guy came to the Rebbe and said to the Rebbe, I heard that she was a great woman. So the Rebbe said to him, a lot more than people believe. And the Rebbe didn't say that because it was his wife. It was because it was the emes. The greatness of the Rebbetzin is forever a secret. You know, there are such things, such neshamas. A third lesson of the Rebbetzin's life was how smart she was. Wisdom. She was a wise woman. Now girls, when you're teenagers, smart means high marks on tests. And the Rebbetzin got good marks on her tests, trust me. I wasn't in school with her, but I'm sure. She was very smart. She had good genes. She was very bright. She had a very high IQ. But you learn as you grow older that smart is not just how much you know. Smart is the wisdom of life. In the olden days, Chassidim used to say that the Shulchan Aruch has five parts. Four parts that you could learn from a book, and the fifth part that nobody could teach. There's Erechayim, there's Eredeya, and Cheshir Mishpat, and Ebenezer. Erechayim teaches you day-to-day life. Eredeya teaches you the laws of Issa head, that kosher, teif, and these things. Cheshir Mishpat is business law, and Ebenezer has to do with marriage issues. And there's something called the fifth Chelek of Shulchan Aruch. The fifth Chelek of Shulchan Aruch is called common sense. Common sense is not common at all. It's not common at all. The Rebbetzin's wisdom, her chokhmah, I'm sure you go to Benoist Rabbeinu, you hear the expression, chokhmas nashim bonsa besa. Chokhmas nashim bonsa besa doesn't mean that you know biology, you can do homework with your children. Chokhmas nashim bonsa besa means klugschaft, real smart. To know what to say and what not to say. To know when to say and what not to say. The Rebbetzin was a genius in chokhmah, in pikhus. And more than she knew what to say, she knew what not to say. And this is a lesson all people need to learn from the Rebbetzin, especially girls. When you're single, you're single. When you get married, you'll be married, you'll have children, you'll have a family, you'll have to go speak to teachers, you have to speak to your husband, Mitzchem. And even now, there's something called the wisdom. The wisdom, and really it's the wisdom of aging. You get older. Your eyes don't work so good, your ears don't work so good, and your brain doesn't work so good. But lessons of life we learn. And that Edison was an extremely smart woman in a real way. Not sly, not manipulative, not smart that I can outsmart. Smart in knowing what to say to whom, when, and how. And this is a very important lesson that we could learn from her life. And you should know this is not just a lesson in person, in human, in being a person. It's a lesson in Yiddishkeit and in Chassidus. It's a lesson in Tznius. It's a lesson in Tznius. I'll tell you a nice little story about a smart woman. It's a true story. It happened a year ago. The governor of the state of California is... What's his name? First name?
Arnold
Schwarzenegger. He happens to be the son of a Nazi. Okay, he's Austrian, the son of a Nazi. And he is very outspokenly pro-Israel, pro-Jew. In other words, he's... I don't know if it's sincere or not, but he has made it very public that he's disconnected from his past. So he became the governor of the state of California. The shliach, there's a shliach in the capital of California, the city of Sacramento. And they're making a public Hanukkah lighting. This is last Hanukkah. And Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to come. This was an international media event. The son of an ex-Nazi is going to light a Hanukkah menorah. You know what the story happened with?
What?
You know who the story happened with? It's a famous story.
This is not this
a year ago. Tafshin Samach Dalet, not this Hanukkah. Anyway, there were hundreds of reporters from countries from all over the world came to this event, and you had these Chabad Shluchim, and they made a dinner, a luncheon with several hundred people, most of whom were important people who write for newspapers, for radio, for television, and Mrs. Cohen wouldn't shake his hand. She wouldn't shake his hand. So But he says to her, loud, loud, Mrs. Cohen, what's this thing that you will not shake my hand? There's a room of 300 people and the room goes quiet. So she says, oh, it's a Jewish thing. In fact, like, it's best that we don't shake hands. It avoids all kinds of misunderstanding. That's what she said. It avoids all kinds of misunderstanding. So he says, loud, that's a wonderful idea. It's a wonderful idea. But that's called wisdom. This kind of wisdom defines the Rebbetzin, and it's a real lesson that people, b'chlal could learn from her, especially girls and women. Now, a couple of more points, because you guys got to go and I got to go too, is the Rebbetzin was pashut a chassid. She was a Rebbe's a chassid. And she was the Rebbe's wife, and the Rebbe's chassid. When I was a kid growing up, I heard a story. The more I think about it, the more I decide the story is not true. But it's still amazing. The story goes that the Rebbetzin would write a letter to the Rebbe for her birthday, and the Rebbe would write back a letter for her birthday, and then when the Rebbe would come... This is what the story... When I was a kid, I heard. I don't believe it, but I'm telling it to you for the point. The Rebbe would write a letter to the Rebbe for her birthday, the Rebbe would answer her, and when the Rebbe came home, she would show her husband the letter that she got from the Rebbe. Whether this is true or not, I don't know, but it does describe the kind of relationship they had. The Rebbe was really a chassid. The word for Rebbe Meglam Bayez
Kayesh. Did she have a sense of humor?
A tremendous sense of humor. A tremendous sense of humor. The words of the Rebbe were precious to her. When she spoke to the Rebbe, or the Rebbe spoke to her, she appreciated the value of every word. And above all else, we need to learn from the Rebbetzin what it means that you don't tell the Rebbe no. We're not smarter than the Rebbe. We don't know better than the Rebbe. In Tavshil Lamed Ches, when the Rebbe had his heart attack, this is very, very famous. They called her. She came from President Street. She walked to 770. She sat down by the door and she gefiert. The Rebbetzin took charge. And she told everybody what to do. She was in charge. All the Rebbe's secretaries, she was the boss. I heard this from somebody who heard this from her. She came in, she sat down in the chair, and she said, Groner, Rabbi Klein, that's how she referred to them. Groner, Rabbi Klein, you go here, you go there.
It's not her.
It seems like it's not her, but she did what she needed to do. But the famous words were that the Rebbe had a severe heart attack, and the doctors were saying that there's going to be a second one, which there was. And they're afraid for the Rebbe's life. They asked the Rebbe to go to the hospital, and the Rebbe refused. So they promised the Rebbe they wouldn't take him to the hospital. They promised him. And the Rebbe slept. The Rebbe would not go to sleep. They gave him sleeping medication. He wouldn't sleep till they promised they wouldn't take him to the hospital. As soon as the Rebbe fell asleep, they turned to the Rebbe and said, you have to allow the Rebbe to go to the hospital. You're the only person who has this authority. You have to sign or approve that the Rebbe should go to the hospital. And she said, no. And they said, you don't understand. His life is in danger. And the Rebbetzin said very emphatically, I heard it from somebody, heard the words from her. Was mein Mann will ich. What my husband wants, I want. Period. Was mein Mann will ich. And a chassid has to understand, was the Rebbe will ich. It's a very hard lesson to learn. If anybody thinks being a chassid is easy, they're honest with themselves. But it is a lesson we can learn from the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin was married to the Rebbe. And in her world, was mein Mann will ich. The only thing that mattered to her was what the Rebbe wanted. And that's the way it should be for us. And in conclusion, let me just tell you two more little details and then I'll let you go. First of all, as you know, all the Rebbetzins passed away right after they made a bracha. The significance of this, I don't know for sure, although people could think of it. The Rebbetzin Shtenes Shadar and the Rebbetzin Divke, the last thing they did before they passed away was they made a bracha and drank a glass of water. The Rebbetzin also passed away the same way. She was in the hospital. It was Tuesday night. I guess Chabez Shvat that year. No, the Rebbe was not there. In fact, the Rebbe was... I'm sorry?
He came visit?
What came visit? She left the house at night and she passed away in the middle of the night. But I heard that the Rebbe was going to go with her. I heard it then, so I don't know if it's true or not. And the Rebbe said it's not necessary. And the Rebbe stayed home. Between the time that the Rebbe passed away and the Levaya, the Rebbe edited a sikha. Just want you to know that. The Rebbe was busy doing, editing a sikha for us to learn. And she was in the hospital. The last thing she asked for was a glass of water. She drank a glass of water and then she passed away. And the story goes that the Rebbe heard that the Rebbetzin passed away. The first words out of the Rebbe's mouth were, Medach Mediazine, the Kinder, the Shluchim. have to tell the kinder the shluchim. This is how the Rebbetzin viewed the shluchim, and how the Rebbe viewed the shluchim. Okay.